Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's a pleasure to be here. It's an opportunity for us to begin to add some multidisciplinary approach to microbial ecology. And the background for this is that the literature is filled with this concept, and we've heard papers this week of saying that there are micro niches in the soils that seem to keep bacteria and colonies, at least, of microbes separate from perhaps sources of carbon. They could be lignins, they could be larger plant material, they could be soil organic matter. And what is happening within a soil profile, or at least a soil volume, that gives these microbial components the opportunity to send out enzymes to degrade perhaps some of the cellulosic materials or other materials in soil organic matter. And we know quite a bit about the diffusion of substrates, as simple as glucose, perhaps some of the cations and anions that would move into these micro niches, oxygen, as we just heard, water moves there. And we know very little bit about what happens to a specific bacterium or perhaps a group of bacteria that are moving through different pores in the soil and how those are either restrained, perhaps convectively, dispersively moved and retained. And so as we begin to have more of these conversations within the hallways of meetings like this and other meetings, as well as in the hallways back at Michigan State, we came to the conclusion that we could probably begin to expand on some of the microtomographic imaging of very small groups of volumes of soil aggregates. These are as small as 1 millimeter. We like to work with a little larger. It's easier to process, easier to look at gradients within the aggregate. The dilemma we find with microtomographic imaging by X-ray synchrotrons as well is the larger the volume, of course, the smaller the resolution. Now, just by way of background, we have looked using the synchrotron at the argon advanced photon source down to a millimeter size, so we can look at somewhere in the neighborhood of 3.2 to 3.5 microns. What we are reporting on today are larger aggregates, simply because we found those to be the aggregate groups in this long-term ecological research project that we have at Michigan State at the Kellogg Biological Center. This NSF project has given us an opportunity to look at now 22 years of changes in tillage, changes in management, native succession, and so forth, and we'll talk about those in detail, and begin to look at which aggregate size seems to be responding the most in its internal intra-aggregate porosity. And so we chose the 4 to 6 millimeter diameters or across. These are never perfect circles, even though we like them to be. The dilemma is we go to the 4 to 6, our minimum resolution is 15 microns. So we're missing a few, obviously, a few of the highways of bacteria moving through soils. So what I'm going to do with the help of my colleagues here, Haiyan Chung, who was a postdoc, Mustaf, a graduate student, Wei Wang, a graduate student, Sasha Kravchenko is the spatial statistician who's also a soil physicist, Joan Rose, many of you know, as a water pathologist, and Mark Rivers, who works with us at the Argonne National Laboratory at the University of Chicago. Just by way of background, this is something we've been observing since the late 80s. We finally got enough replications to publish it, but it's very easy to go out into the field and find an aggregate of whatever size. This one happens to be a large one. There are these 14 replications. Happen to be large ones that roots are adjacent to or firmly attached to. Now, of course, there are mycorrhizae. There are a lot of other things occurring here besides just the simple movement of carbon from root exudates to a soil aggregate. Let me indicate just what happens, and we'll give you some rate functions here in a minute. What we're doing is giving you the percent of new carbon from an alfalfa root that's growing in a conventionally tilled Kalamazoo loam that has traditionally been growing corn. For those of you that recall C3 and C4 plants, there is a big C13 gradient of difference in the delta C13 signal of C3 versus C4. C4 in this soil was in the mid-19s, the minus-19s part per mil. If you put an alfalfa plant in there, the roots of alfalfa are producing delta 13s of somewhere in the middle of minus 23, minus 24. So these numbers here are the percentage of new carbon coming from this C3 alfalfa root into the total carbon in here. So this doesn't add up to 100. So two-thirds of the carbon that's stored in the exterior, one-third roughly of this aggregate that we could remove by a mechanical peeling device, is roughly the new carbon coming from the C3 plant. We then looked at what was the total carbon in the brown region, again, not the whole aggregate, but 43%, roughly 40% of the carbon stored in the mid-region of an aggregate that was 13.8 millimeters across was new carbon from this alfalfa root or these alfalfa roots. Sometimes we had two or three. And notice this is a 20-month-old field growth of alfalfa. So some of these could have had many roots before that came through and died and so forth. We're not arguing from a perspective of how much carbon per unit of root was the substrate here that was migrating across. We just wanted to get a diffusion calculation of how fast this carbon is moving across. A part of the flaw here, of course, is we didn't know when it started and we didn't know when it stopped. We certainly went to the field and we found a root there. That root could be 2 months old, it could be 2 years old, or 20 months old. So what we did, though, is we assumed that there was a carbon source moving out of these roots into this carbon, so we made a rough calculation that the flux rate of this carbon across the specific distance for a given period of time gave us somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 times 10 to the minus 4th millimeters per hour of carbon diffusion. Now, Claire Chenault was doing some of the same work about the same time, and she was using pesticides that were labeled. And when she had saturated aggregates, she showed very clearly that the flux rate of the carbon from the surface to the interior was somewhere in the order of four orders of magnitude faster, 1 millimeter per hour. Okay, one of this graduate students here that Chris Blackwood, that all of us know, Elder Paul was his major professor. We worked very closely with him. And what he did is he looked at these aggregates again from the same groups of soils from across the field, a little smaller than 18. He looked at aggregates that came from maize, alfalfa, and these two rotations. And he went back in with some of the T-riflip work that he was very familiar with, that he had the appropriate isolation techniques and so forth, which I won't go into. But what he discovered, and which was very fascinating to us, is that if we look at the large separation across this dotted line, these microbial communities, as you could best evaluate with the T-riflip, were the interior portions of the microbe, of the aggregate. The microbial communities in this region were the exterior region of the aggregate. So these microbial communities seem to change based on substrate levels, based on porosity, based on oxygen levels, perhaps of water, etc., micro niches that protect them. And we even saw some differences I won't go into as you look at subcomponents of the rotation. Just a couple of years ago, we published some data that Park et al. Developed as we were adding now sucrose. And it was isotopically labeled with the natural isotope C13. And then we put these aggregates through 5 wetting and drying cycles. Each time, we took them to near saturation, added the appropriate quantity of sucrose, I think it was 5 micromoles, sorry, and then we dry it. Then we repeated this 5 times. So we asked the question as we peeled the surfaces, exterior, interior, transitional and interior regions, where was this carbon going? Well, it wasn't too much of a surprise based on previous data that we have more pores, larger pores in the soil aggregate surface, so we're going to accumulate more of this delta 13 glucose. And there was a gradient, of course, going into the interiors. I don't have time to present the rest of this paper, but it also showed that as we went through dry wet cycles of 3, 4, and 5, we increase the aggregate stability. In addition, we took a lot of soil respiration measurements of these. As we put more and more of this glucose into the aggregate, we begin to conserve the losses of the respiratory losses, the CO2, of the established soil organic matter. That had a different signal, of course. So as long as the candy store was there and the glucose was there for microbes to consume, obviously that was their preference, and perhaps the diffusion of glucose was much better than some of this, the larger particulate matter, the organic matter. I won't go into detail of that anymore, except to say, as Paith et al. Published a very nice review of microtomographic imaging of aggregates from different types of soils in four different continents and different management systems, he showed very clearly that as we begin to look at a type of aggregate that came from highly tilled soils, as well as it compared then to some type of a natural succession, in other words, not tilled, but still filled with roots and so forth, there was a huge difference in the porosities of these. As we begin to look at reconstructions of these portions, and we can go in and just cut out a block or a cube, as you see here, these are very complex. Of the colors here, the reds are somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 microns, the yellows turn into 10 to 12, and it continues up through the blues, and you see the big pore here in the middle. We just knew that there was a lot of connectivity of these pores of multiple sizes, with throats, if you wish, narrowing and expanding between and among these different pores. As we began to cut out some of these pore sizes, and we looked at pores that were just between 100 and 120 microns in diameter, we could then begin, I have just one highlighted here in red, we could begin to quantify and measure the distance of the tortuosity. Tortuosity, for those of you who took soil physics way back, is that difference between a straight line between X and Y and the curvilinear or the convoluted line of a soil pore. So this then brought us to some groups of methods I'll go through, and it's going to get a little complex. I'm going to try to simplify it as much as possible in these now, 25 minutes or less. We looked at a specific group of soils, again from this LTR experiment. It's a Kalamazoo sandy loam. And that has seven, now eight different treatments. We just looked at three, and we're going to use T1 intermittently with conventional tillage. That's a moldboard plow that disturbs this soil. It's chiseled, so we break up the aggregates. We expose a lot of carbon, soil organic matter, and so forth, and there's a lot of respiration. Carbon is lost in this type of management. If we go then to T2, which is the minimum tillage, that was essentially no tillage except for the planting tools, and then compared this to a native succession, T7. So we will use T1, T2, and T7 intermittently for these treatments. It's just easier to put onto a graph. So these treatments then were a summary of what we're repeating here of 15 soil aggregates that were scanned at the photon source in Chicago. You know, the nice thing about scanning is it's possible. The difficulty with scanning, it takes about 2 to 5 hours per aggregate, and the other difficulty is we only have a limited amount of time at the synchrotron. So it would be good if we could give you summaries now of 300 aggregates or 50 aggregates. We're limiting ourselves to 5 because we have these three treatments of 15 aggregates. Anyway, that's one of the weaknesses of this first effort. So the porosity of these aggregates were compared to the distributions of those pores then were related to what we call the chloride convective dispersive, as well as then the locations of this bacteria. We'll go through this very quickly. If we look at soil aggregates that we were comparing, these are the textural differences. There's usually a lot more sand and silt, of course, in aggregates than there is in the bulk soil. And that's nothing new. We're just giving you that as background. If we compare now these three treatments, T1, T2, T7, conventional till, no-till, and native succession, we see that the porosities, total porosities, were similar. Now, these porosities are calculated based upon the quantification of the micropores and macropores using synchrotron microtomographic imaging. It's not the conventional 1 minus the bulk density divided by the particle density. So these are very accurate, and we're very pleased about them. If we look at the porosities in these aggregates greater than 15, oh, they're a little larger on the T1. That's not too surprised, because these aggregates were broken and put back together and broken and put back together. A porosity less than 15 was about the same. So here's where it gets a little complex. We won't spend too much time on this, except to say, here are the microns of the pores, 15 to over 400 microns. And if we look at the distribution and the percent pore space in these aggregates of T1, T2, T7, and these are blue, red, and yellow, we can see there's not much variability at the 15, there's not much variability among these three management systems. At the 31, we begin to see significant differences occurring at 46, and that'd be 46 to 62, and then quite a few statistically, this is an expanded portion of this, differences as we move up into these larger pores. And these larger pores are what have been reported in the past. So we're very happy to see that as we look at small quantities of pores and small micropores, that we can begin to make comparisons between chloride flux and bacteria flux. Now it's going to get a little more complicated. I think I'll clarify it for you. We're going to go through it pretty quickly. Here we have the three treatments. Here we have the pores at 15 microns. Here we have the pore percentages of 100 microns. And we cut these aggregates into four components. We cut off the top. I'll get into that in a minute. We looked at four sides. We looked at the center upper and the center lower. That's repeated across here. Notice a couple of things. We're finding significant differences between the side and the top of the T1 versus the interior. Not too surprising. We showed you that in the first carbon flux into an aggregate. We saw the same thing in T2, many more of the pores in this region, in the top and the side, in contrast to the interior. So greater numbers of small pores, we should have said greater than 15 micron in the top and sides of aggregates from all three treatments, appeared to be, though, a mirror image of just the opposite of the hundreds. So if we have a lot of small ones in these sections, we have fewer large ones, but we have many more large ones, 100 microns, where we have fewer small ones. We don't have the time to give you the details here, but we can make the calculation then of how many macropores are connected to micropores. What is the branching of these pores? Here's what we did. We couldn't saturate these aggregates and then drain them and apply a vacuum to pull out the solutions, whether it was bacteria or chloride. So we had to embed them into a glass bead matrix inside a chamber that we could sterilize, etc. And then we could add the solutions and we could then flush them out or pull them out by vacuum. So we'll give you just a little bit of that information. Looking at the advective dispersive, in other words, how much does this soil impact the absorption and retention of chloride as we run it through the multiple wetting and drying cycles? Okay, these are up to 10 cycles. And it's really very little difference. This is for the T1 across many hours. The same thing occurred in the T7 across many hours. We're not surprised. Chlorides are anions. They're going to flow through a soil very quickly. If we did it with a cation, it would be completely different. A cation would probably move something like this, stay for a long period of time, and then be washed out. Keep in mind that we're working with a microbial surface, a bacteria surface that has a Zwitterion, if you want to use the chemical terms, pluses and minuses around that polysaccharide coat. Okay, so then as we use the same systems to apply the bacteria, we essentially buried them mostly into the glass beads, but we could still bring a pipette with a needle down here and apply a specific quantity of bacteria on the surface of each of these electrodes, and then began to ask the question, if we applied E. coli here, how long did it take for it to flow through this full volume of an aggregate that was 4 to 6 millimeters across? What we did is we applied 10 to the fourth E. coli, and we apply different volumes. We'll get to that in a minute. Then we slice these into 7 identified segments, okay? And we'll go into that segment splitting. If we applied the drops, a few microliters or many microliters to the top, we cut this off later after it equilibrated and came to equilibrium in 2 to 4 hours, we would cut off the left side, the right side, the front side, which is missing, and the back side. So these, every time you see the side analysis, it's an average of these 4 numbers. Then we had a lower center and an upper center, and we'll go through these then to try to identify what happened within each of these ranges and what percent of total recovered E. coli DNA could we extract from these. After we applied 96% of the E. coli and washed it for 4 hours through this glass bead system we just showed you, we wanted to ask the question, how much stayed inside the aggregate and how much was washed through? Well, the summary is somewhere in the neighborhood of 96% on average stayed in these 3 different kinds of aggregates from different tillage systems. We washed through 1 to 3%, okay? So we have a lot of bacteria to work with. So then we ask the question, although the sand, silt, and clay and total porosity of this was similar, and we could scan these for greater than 15 microns, we could then ask the question, what is the mean pore size in this lower center, center upper, the 4 sides, and the top? And you can see the distribution here. Nothing was significant except among the 3 treatments of T1, T2, T7 in this upper region, number 6. So then we had a little of a dilemma in our minds, in our hands, because every aggregate's different. We would cut them as best we could in this uniform pattern, but we had to standardize it by looking at or quantifying the CFUs, the chloroform colony forming units, by the weight of this subsample, divided then by the sum of all the subsamples divided by the weight of all of them. So what this told us was, this would give us a ratio, an E. coli ratio, or we call it an SDR, a spatial distribution ratio among these 7 components. And as we looked into these, the 7, of course, 4 of these were combined into the sides. So as we looked at these, whether we vacuum extract or whether we didn't do a thing after we added the E. coli, we saw, with 2 exceptions, very similar quantities in the different treatments. And of course, the exception was the lower center. So as we dropped this in and gravity had impact upon it for a period of 2 hours, obviously we had a substantial higher quantity of flow. Now we're going to go through 4 of these relationships, 3 of these relationships as what happens when the soil is dry and we saturate, well, as we're adding our microbes, we're adding 30% of the porosity in water. So we really have bulk flow. So we're talking about predominantly bulk flow. It's putting 30% of the pore space of volume of water on this volume of soil, and it just goes in very quickly. Now, why are we going through this study? Because the literature is filled with manure applications to soils, whether they're air dry on the surface or whether they're partially moist or if they're near saturation. If they're near saturation, there's going to be a lot more E. coli that goes to the groundwater. So we were asking this now at an aggregate level. What is the quantity of the pore ratios that stay with, of the E. coli ratios that stay within these pores? Let me explain this a bit. 3 treatments, T1, 2, and 3, conventional till, no-till, and native succession. Here's the percent distribution of this ratio among these 4, top, side, upper, lower, and lower center. So we can see quite a bit of differences, and we can go through a lot of this, but I've just highlighted the red, with red arrows, where the highest ratios were in the T7, the highest ratios were in the T2, and the highest ratios in the T1. We're getting some no significant differences, but at the 4.04 and 0.15, we're seeing that there are differences between the never-tilled T7s compared to these that have had tillage in their background, their history. Okay, now what we've done here is a very dry one with 30% of the water. Now we've added 25% of the pore water into the soil, let it equilibrate two hours. Then we added just 5% of the pore solution that carried these 10 to the 4 E. coli. You can see, number one, that there's a lot more movement. I should point out here, this is 0 to 5 ratio. This is 0 to half that, okay? As students put these things together, they didn't give us the same ratio, but it does show a greater difference. Okay, what we see here, again, the red arrows, that on the T1, when we had a wetter soil, we had more of the E. coli staying at the top. That's different than when it was dry. On the T2, we had a substantially higher quantity of microbes staying where it was dropped onto the aggregate, in contrast to when it was dry. And then, of course, we see the increase in the top. So as the soil, on the T7, as the soil is wetter than air dry, and we add just a small quantity of E. coli, we see predominantly diffusive flow. In other words, it's taking time for these bacteria to move through the finer pores by capillary activity, as well as diffusion from regions of higher concentration to lower. Now let's go somewhere in between. Here's a 15% pore water filled, and then we really add a whole bunch of water as we add the E. coli, so we now have 45% of the pore space filled. Again, we see substantial quantities of the E. coli in the top on all of these. There are some exceptions here, but as the soil gets wetter and wetter and wetter, now we're at 30 and we add 30 more, so we have a total of 60. Notice where most of the bacteria stay, either the top or the side. So what's going to happen in the soil? If these aggregates are nearly saturated and bacteria are added and moving down through the macropores around the aggregates are going to absorb very little bacteria. Consequently, we're going to see a whole lot more bacteria into the groundwater. We can now use some of the same data. It's a little different in a regression coefficient of percent distribution of ratio of, I'm sorry, it's not percent, it's just a ratio of the different aggregates at 15 pore size, a micron pore size, 30 to 100, and then next one we'll get beyond 100. Notice we're seeing, as the number of 15 micron size pores increase, there's actually a smaller ratio in the soil that was absolutely air dry until we applied the 5%. And this is just in the top slice. Notice also that we've got a primary capillary flow in this one, in contrast to the bulk plus diffusive flow, because now we have larger pores, 30 to 100 microns, same dry soil, adding 25% pore space of water or of solution with the bacteria, and we had a much better distribution as long as the number of percentage of pores were at the 30 to 100 micron size. So as pore sizes get larger, there's going to be more bacterial distribution at a very dry system with water applied. So if we add 15 tons of slurry to a dry soil out in the field, we're going to see a whole lot more absorption if we have these medium-sized pores in the aggregates. Again, we see the same sort of thing, moist, very dry, added with more water, okay? These now had pores between 15 microns, and as the percentage of pore increases from the dry to the 25% before we add the 30% here and the 5% here, so both of these ultimately are 30, we're going to see an increase in the bacteria movement into these pores as those frequencies or percentages of pores increase at this site. We see just the opposite at the 100 micron size, okay? If it's dry, we're gonna see as the 100 micron size increases, again, the top slice, we're gonna see a bit of a decline. Notice this is a very small R squared, but we're going to see a bit better with a higher R squared decline in the quantities of E. coli that are distributed into the 100 micron pores. So in summary, what we can begin to say as we begin to find the percentage of pores in 15 versus 100, there are a greater number of small pores in this region, And that mirror image that we showed you earlier is here. And as we begin to apply E. coli to the aggregate in dry, moist, or very wet soils, the aggregates absorb many fewer bacteria. So what we can do now is show just a little bit of the summary of this distribution using the Roy G. Biv, if you wish, of the spectrum of light. That red is the smallest quantity of E. coli. Orange and yellow are the next level. Blue and indigo are the highest level. So if we're looking down on the top, here's where we applied the E. coli. We look at the bottom view, here's where it came and ended up. We noticed we had quite a few in the side and the bottom. Here's the side view. That's pretty difficult to see, and I think if everything works well, we'll begin to show you what happens in the distribution of these 4 to 6 millimeter size aggregates as we apply bacteria right here. That's the top. It's going to go around and show us where the bottom is, okay? We can go through this a couple more times just to give you a perspective. Maybe I can't. Let's try it again. There it is. That what we are finding then, that there are connected pores. These pores are filled with bacteria in this ratio, this concentration of E. coli. And as that begins to occur, now we've established a new a set of microsites of a nearly E. coli, quote unquote, saturated aggregate. So the question is, as we begin to see higher concentrations of E. coli in this aggregate, based upon the initial water contents and the quantity of added, how fast is this diffusion to lower concentrations going to move? And how many of those bacteria are going to survive within the gradients of oxygen and substrates and cations and anions? We don't have the answer to that. We can just show you what I think some definitive components today, that pore sizes and water contents of those water-filled pores have a direct impact upon the E. coli sorption and retention of E. coli. So if we were to put this into a soil volume where we have a handful of aggregates, we take one and we've saturated this with, okay, carbon and bacteria enrichments from plant roots and residues and manures and decomposition products. There's going to be a movement of all of these compounds and bacteria down through the macropores, and each one of these aggregates are going to have some porosity around them, because by definition, an aggregate is broken at the plane of weakness that has the largest porosity between the two components that we call a single aggregate. So let's take one of these out and begin to look what happens. If what we've just shown you in this last video has gradients of bacteria in this based upon the content of water when the bacteria were added, then we're going to combine this with gradients that we've published before, many others have, porosities, ions, oxygen, biotic compounds, components, as well as substrates. How long does it take before this reaches an equilibrium and then can either process as an E. coli or any microbial micro community would have, and or as it begins to diminish because of limited substrates, absence of oxygen in the case of E. coli, and all these other components that are changing that microbial community spatial distribution in single aggregates over a period of time. So what I'll do is I'll stop with that and give you a couple of summary conclusions. That E. coli transport is obviously driven by water flow, and that is a function of pore size. Anybody who has any experience of applying water to any dry or wet pore understands that. So do bacteria. Pores in soil aggregates 4 to 6 across from fields receiving less tillage, T7. The T2 and T7 have greater spatial heterogeneity than those just recently tilled. Prevailing smaller pores of 30 to 60 within the aggregates of T1 are even more evenly distributed, and they have larger pores in the T7, primarily because of mesial fauna activity, roots, fungal, etc. But these all appear in the interiors of the aggregates. Here we find the larger pores in the exterior of tilled aggregates. So air-dried aggregates saturated during additions of bacteria have the potential for the greatest redistribution, if you wish, the most uniform distribution of E. coli within the aggregates. When soil water contents approach saturation, E. coli flow within the aggregate is reduced and, of course, lost to groundwater. When initial soil water content is lower and higher water contents are added along with the applications of the bacteria, the microbial distribution is much higher. Now, what we don't know is what the breakpoint is here. That's the next level of research. Larger soil aggregate pores conduct fewer bacteria when soil is nearly saturated. Greater abundance of these medium-sized pores and aggregates of the conventionally tilled uniformly distribute E. coli, and as long as there's not too much water. Inter-aggregate pore complexity of pore connectivities among the larger, greater than 60, less than 15, appear to be controlling pores most profoundly influencing the advective dispersion and retention of bacteria. So I'll stop there and give acknowledgement to the supplying funding sources, and I'll be happy to stop and try to answer some questions. Thank you.
Any questions for Dr. Adam? Quick cross check. These are non-motile bacteria in this case.
These are both.
They're both what? Simple.
And it's a function of the age of the bacteria. We were using just the newest. We think most of them were not motile. But as they age, they become more motile with the flagella.
Okay. So, just rehearse with us how that story changes with the motile bacteria.
That would be a good question. We didn't wait long enough for them to develop motility.
Right.
Okay. And you're asking for a supposition. But of course, it's going to either propel the rate of movement into a saturated pore in contrast to an immobile, yes, a non-motile bacteria, because the motile bacteria are moving with the flow of water, primarily in a Poiseuillian manner.
Yeah, but there's also then some chemotaxis.
Oh, there's always chemotaxis, diffusivities, yes. Function of pore wall charge. Yes, is Andre Gooper here. Gooper, he's not. He's published quite a bit. No, he's published quite a bit on this, yes. And it's exactly what's happening. As the soil is too wet, there's more bacteria flowing through. And perhaps some of the rest of you have published some of this. So there's this comparison. The question is, where's the cutoff point? How wet can aggregates be that have this pore size distribution before the E. coli bypass? We're going to have to spend a lot more time with the data. We have a graduate student working with some lattice Boltzmann calculations to give us a modeling component if that turns out well. And of course, the problem is E. coli don't have nice charges like calcium and potassium and phosphorus, but that'll be the next step.
I have a question.
Yes.
That. You said the dry wetting cycle will increase stability.
Yes.
Can you explain that? Like?
Yes, drying and wetting cycles are experienced by soil, the surface soils in a tilled soil up in Michigan approximately 37 times. Okay? If it's tilled less, that surface soil is going to have an exposure somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 to 50 times each season. that's the drying and wetting, from air dry to at least 7 to 12% water or higher. So soils are going through this near the soil surface, are going through this quite frequently. And we know up to, in the laboratory, we've taken these to 17, we haven't gone to 50 dry wetting and cycles. As we have dry wetting cycles that are increasing in the presence of a substrate, there's always going to be a stronger aggregate. The aggregate stability is going to continue.
So it depends on the outer layer carbon accumulation as well.
That's one of the primary factors. I'm sure there are some mesofauna, fungi, et cetera, that are having an impact. What we do know with work that we've conducted with Reinerhorn and Stefan Paith in Germany, that the expansion contraction of clays, the higher these 2-to-1 clays are in the aggregate, the more and more the closer the surfaces of the clays, with the cations increasing the binding properties as we go through wetting and drying cycles.
So even if it is a 2-to-1 clay, with a now large expansion capability, the aggregate stability will stay the same.
No, it still continues to increase, whether it's 2-to-1 or 1-to-1, because it's a microbial, it is a clay mineralogy, it's a cation exchange, and I would guess it's a function of polysaccharides and a whole group of other sticky agents. Yes? Okay, thank you.